888-9227. Welcome and good morning. I'm Gary McNamara with Eric Harley.
Hey, it's Ask the Law. Retired senior trooper Monty Dial of the Texas Highway Patrol is here, courtesy of Old Blue USA. And by the way, I just want to let you know that all the information is up to date as of this morning, Monday, November 2nd, 2009. And it can change without notice. Statements or comments made by anybody other than Trooper Dial considered to be opinions only. If you want to submit your CMV questions anytime, you can go to askthelaw.org, click on the big red button that says email Ask the Law, tell them you heard about it on the Midnight Radio Network. Let's talk about the hours of service as it's set up right now, and what we might look for those that are just tuning in. And if you've got a question about hours of service, 800-288-9227, any other regulatory item, take advantage of Trooper Dial's time. It is absolutely free of charge, courtesy of Old Blue USA. For those just joining us, we're looking for a new hours of service rule that may come about over the next year or so. In fact, over maybe the next several months. We were talking off the air about hours of service as it stands, and I was surprised to learn from you that there are... Because when you talk hours of service these days, you have to include electronic onboard recorders. Those two are going to go hand in hand at some point, because that's the only reason you have EOBRs. The EOBRs that are out there in operation right now, percentage-wise, relatively few, a very small number.
Yes, very. I would probably say maybe less than 1 or 2% of the fleets.
All right, and is this... primarily, did we see this come about as a result of all the talk? Was the timing right for the talk about regulatory issues with EOBRs? Was that about the time all of this started to happen with the fleets that do have EOBRs?
I think so.
All right. A lot of them right now, and I've heard drivers say that they have. We've had actually a fairly decent amount of drivers that have told us they're already operating with electronic onboard recorders. Mm-hmm. Is there a misconception when it comes to the definition of EOBRs? And back in the day, several years ago, we kept calling them black boxes. A black box is something totally different. But electronic onboard recorders, are there, as far as the computers, we all know we're familiar with Qualcomm and everything else, and we're familiar with the GPS systems on trucks. Do you think there's a misconception that drivers believe maybe they have an electronic onboard recorder in place when, in fact, that's not going to be what's intended under a future rule?
Well, most trucks anymore have a computer on board.
Right.
It does a lot of things. Diagnostic. It controls the truck's actual movements.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with recording the hours. I know that under a lot of the sayings going on prior to a lot of the current talk about the EOBRs, people were afraid that law enforcement would have access to find out whether or not the driver was speeding and writing him the speeding ticket off of that. That's not what an electronic onboard recorder is. The electronic onboard recorder merely records the motions of the truck. If the truck is rolling down the highway, the driver should be on the driving line. If the the driver's at a terminal and the driver has to supervise or take care of some paperwork, the driver goes to on-duty, not driving. If the driver's in the sleeper berth,
right,
he makes an entry to show that he's in the sleeper berth. So you still have the same four lines that you have now. It's just now then with the electronic onboard recorder, you have a system that actually does all of the recording for you so that you're not having to constantly take pen and paper and draw your status.
Right. So, and more importantly, so that they know that you're not cheating.
Yes.
You're not making it up as you go along.
Correct.
They want to make sure that it's accurate.
Right. And then most of them have it set up that if the truck starts rolling within a minute, if it detects that you were in the sleeper berth, or if you were off duty, or you were on duty not driving, the truck's rolling, you'll get an alarm that'll sound that says, hey, you forgot to take yourself and put yourself driving. And the driver just really reaches over there and makes a couple of entries and down the road he goes.
All right. And there are some concerns beyond that with what an electronic onboard recorder might not have the flexibility to do, and we'll get to that in just a moment. Let's get to your calls right now at 800-288-9227. It's Ask the Law. Senior Trooper Monty Dial, retired of the Texas Highway Patrol, is here to answer your questions.
Let's talk to John. John, hi. You're on the Midnight Radio Network, and you're on with Trooper Dial. Welcome. Hi.
Well, thank you, and good evening. And Trooper Dial, thank you very much for all your service to the citizens of Texas. My question is about the split sleeper in what would be our fourth change of rules in a very short period of time.
Right.
Does the rule provide, the new rule provide, for the continued use of a split sleeper? And do you think we're going to have some education for both the driving and the enforcement community so that we'll all understand it? And I appreciate you answering my question.
Thank you. We do appreciate it, John.
John, right now, I think it's just everybody's with the blindfold out there throwing darts trying to figure out exactly what's going to happen.
Because we know, okay, there are a couple of things that happened, John, within just hours of this story breaking. When it was breaking, first of all, I was awakened during the middle of the day, which is never good. And then there were two additional stories to say, because one was, they were willing, the first story was, yes, we're willing to look at the current hours of service rule. Then it became, they positively are going to review it. And then more and more news came out to the effect that not only would they be reviewing it, but it was likely that there would be some change in the hours of service rule. So as this started to evolve very quickly in the hours that this story was breaking, there was a lot of information or a lot of, I guess, questions that came up surrounding that. With the proposed rulemaking, what we'll learn, John, is that, first of all, they have to come out with that official proposed rulemaking. There's a public comment period. There's going to be a lot of fleets that are involved. There's going to be a lot of information that we've talked about over the last several years, going back to, gosh, even leading up to 2003, 2004, when that first change was brought about. Trooper Dial, do you believe that that in making this whatever this rule looks like, in fact, there a lot of that information is going to be rehashed? Are we going to see advocates, do you think, from the industry, the trucking industry, as cooperative, or I guess as motivated as they were back in 2002, 2003, and then again in 2005 to try and stand the position?
Well, I think they will. Prior to the 2004 rule, there was a lot of the companies that were on and off of the fence based upon whether or not it fit their needs
their
or not.
Their operation, right.
Once the 2004 hours came on board, the companies all seemed to grasp it. They embraced it because it was something that they could work with. And so now then, I think the court battles are fixing to start.
Yeah.
Because ATA has already made a comment that if it's anything other than what the current rules are, they will take and sue FMCSA.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the battle is just fixing to start.
Yeah, and I think
my chief concern is that with the split sleeper, and Trooper Dial, let's all be honest with each other, we use that as a tool because, I'll be the first to admit, it's a tool to allow me to get further in a 24-hour period.
Oh, yeah, and in fact, that's what I was telling Gary earlier. Under the old rules, a driver could basically be on the road 24 hours a day and never get a lick of sleep.
Yes, sir.
Simply by going to taking an hour here, an hour there, going up to the off-duty, going to sleeper berth, and a driver could be on the road 24 hours and never get a lick of sleep.
Right.
And if our primary concern truly is safety, the APA's, I would call it tacit support for electronic onboard recorders, is great. But an actual commitment by all of us, especially the shippers, would make the road safer. And I'm sorry I've taken up so much of your time.
No. Okay. That's good fine, point. John. And the thing is, that was one of the things that in reading a lot of these articles, that was where a lot of the drivers have really a beef with the current rules, is the fact that they have no way to stop the 14-hour clock. And I told some of the guys before, I said, look, give them a chance to get the EOBRs in place. And I said, there might be a chance that once EOBRs are installed, that if you have to go to a shipper and you're delayed an hour, a 2, 3, 4, and 5 hours at a shipper with the electronic onboard recorder, you might be able to take and use that time to stop your clock.
Yeah.
It's just anecdotal information from guys at truck stops, but that's really what we're looking for. There needs to be a mechanism in place to stop and or restart based on delays.
Well, and
foreseen delays.
Yeah, and John, the one thing that I have written about during blogging on our website and writing articles and everything and of course primarily talking on the program is the fact that, look, all of these old arguments, which I guess was the point of my question to Trooper Dial a moment ago, and thank you for the call. We do appreciate that. One of my basic concerns is that this is a rule. As long as this is a rule, there's always going to be challenges. Well, I know there's going to be challenges from groups, big and small, no matter what comes out of this. But if we lead up to this, and we talked about this in our pre-show meeting, if we lead up to this new rulemaking and include all the information and challenges that have come along till then, shouldn't it result in a more permanent, and that's, I use that word lightly, hours of service rule? Shouldn't that, based on what we've learned, and all of the issues that were addressed in all of the court challenges in the summer of 2004 and with the 2003 and 2005 rules, again, there's scientific data. You and I talked about that, the REM sleep, what's required, the amount of time behind the wheel and in the bunk. I mean, shouldn't all of this lead to a more substantial rule that has more footing?
If that was the case, why was the advocacy groups after this last go-around, why did they make a haste trip back to the court?
Yeah.
Because the court basically stated, because they were challenging the 11 hours of driving.
Right, the 34-hour restart.
They were challenging the 34 reset.
Right.
Under the court's ruling that they made in 2007, was a procedural issue.
Right. The judges came back this is just, on our part, we want to see this procedural issue contained.
So FMCSA went back, republished the rules, gave people ample time to make the comments. Everybody, you know, they followed their protocol, did everything like they were supposed to.
Yeah.
Published the rules, and guess what? Here they are back at the court again.
Wow. Yeah, and you're right. I think there will always be a challenge out there, but it just seems like we could work towards something that's going to at least satisfy everybody to a certain degree, not to every degree. We're back in a moment. It is Ask the Law. Get on board right now.
800-288-9227. It's the Midnight Radio Network. Eric Harley, Gary McNamara, and it's Ask the Law with retired senior trooper Monty Dial. Right to your calls we go. Frank in Kansas. Frank, hi. You're on the Midnight Radio Network. You're on Ask the Law. Welcome.
Hey, hey fellas. God bless you. God bless America now more than ever.
Thank you.
you betcha. Hey, let me ask you something. We just got a memo And if this reg passes, it's a deal. It's a new DOT reg, and it's a big what if it passes. But the state read where if you're 250 pounds and you have an 18-inch neck,
right,
you will have to prove to DOT that you do not have sleep apnea. Are you guys?
Yes, we. In fact, you might just be joining us, and what we were talking about, Frank, is the. And what we're going to do, we're going to give you more time on the side of the break. If you'll hold, we'll come back with Trooper Dial. We want to expand for those just joining us and talk more about CSA 2010, but the new DOT physical requirements as it relates to sleep apnea and what might be used to set the parameters here. And we've talked about the body mass index, the BMI. And other, again, other parameters like the size of your neck that would require you to get that sleep study done before you could get your DOT physical. So we'll get to you in just a moment. Stand by, Frank. It's the Ask the Law on the Midnight Radio Network.
800-288-9227. It's the Midnight Radio Network and Ask the Law with retired senior trooper Monty Dial, 800-288-9227. If you want to get aboard, if you have a question, I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley.
And it's made possible by Old Blue USA. We thank R.J. Taylor and the entire staff there, which now includes retired senior trooper Monty Dial, for making all of this possible. We've been doing this for years, and we thank them for their continued efforts toward a safer trucking industry. The information and answers are up to date as of this morning, November 2nd, 2009. They can change without notice. Statements or comments made by anyone other than Trooper Dial are considered to be opinions only. Drivers, go to askthelaw.org for your CMV questions anytime. Askthelaw.org. Click on the big red button that says email Ask the Law. We've got a couple of text messages that have come in. Let's go back to Frank, who is on Kansas and waiting patiently during the break. And Frank, you heard right. We don't know if the neck measurements are going to be a part of this new DOT physical requirement as it relates to sleep apnea, but they are going to set up some parameters. And Trooper Dial, fill us in here on what we should know when it comes to sleep apnea, or what we do know now and what drivers might expect over the next year leading up to CSA 2010.
Is this going to be coming up in 2010 or 2011? Or?
Well, it's CSA 2010 is the initiative from the FMCSA. And it's, by the way, there is a website, csa2010.com, and one of the issues that they're going to tackle here is a possible new DOT physical requirement that pertains to sleep apnea. It's not necessarily tied directly right now to CSA 2010. However, these new DOT physical requirements could then include them. So again, Trooper Dial, what should we know here?
What happens is right now FMCSA is currently doing a review of some of their medical studies. They're looking at creating a national registry for the doctors to be a member of, which means that they have to go in every year, every 2 years, and do some continuing education classes. Part of that will include an actual sleep study.
Right.
Whether or not it will be based strictly on your body mass index, or whether or not it'll be based on the neck size, that's something that everybody right now is going to have to wait. I know Eric was talking earlier that a lot of the sleep studies out there, they're already putting information out that says if you have a body in a BMI of this much or a neck size of this much, then we want you to go ahead and come on in and do a sleep study. That's up to you.
What happens if you're just a big guy?
Well, and here again, I think it's like I was telling Eric, if your BMI or your neck size, and you know, if they do choose to go in addition to the BMI, they do include the neck size. Once you go in and have the study done once, that's it. It's over with. You don't have to go back and do it the next time.
I got you.
Yeah. Well, what if there's a situation though where, let's say, and we all go through this, over the next 5 years I gain weight and I get to that point where I've had a sleep study,
right?
But I'm going to go in how often could I be required? I guess is the question.
Every 2 years.
Every 2 years, you could be required to have a sleep study,
right?
Whatever you come up for renewal,
right?
All right. So that's my greatest concern, and I know it's going to be the concern of drivers out there as well, is that you get into a situation where every couple of years you might face this, depending on where you are. If you've had the sleep study, let's say you're 275 pounds, you have a sleep study, and nothing shows up, you're fine, no sleep apnea, does that mean that in 2 years your next DOT doctor could say, all right, you still fit the requirements, you still fit that BMI requirement, you're going to have to do another sleep study? I mean, are we looking at essentially bigger guys and gals having to do this every couple of years if they're not getting their weight in line or getting below that BMI trigger?
I think as long as they, as long as factors have not changed in the 2 years.
Yeah.
If you go in this year and you have a neck size of this much, a BMI of this much, mm-hmm. you're this tall and you weigh this much, 2 years from now you go back in and pretty much everything is the same, I don't know that they could. I don't know that they would make you go in and have another sleep study.
And who's going to pay for this? Is the driver going to pay for it? The employer, DOT, insurance? Any idea?
It won't be DOT.
Yeah, we can rule DOT out.
Yeah.
It's
likely going to be the driver. This is what we learned with. And now there may be policies in place where the companies have their own policy, their
right.
own initiative as a matter of policy, and come in and say, look, we'll pay for a sleep study. But that tells me, though, Frank, that they're going to be in need of drivers or in need of good drivers in order to bring that type of policy on. And anytime they're offering an incentive like that, they're, again, offering it for a reason, and it's usually out of the need of drivers.
And turn, it could be that they could get it written in such a way that it'll be covered under your medical insurance.
Yeah. Okay. All right. If that's the case, then that might help out with costs. Frank, thank you so much. We do appreciate you being out there for us. 800-288-9227. Had a question come in from Larry. Wants to know, when can I use my truck for personal conveyance? When is it legal to use his truck for personal conveyance?
Larry, what I would recommend that you do is get a copy of the DOT regulations that has the interpretations in it. If you don't, go to the FMCSA website, and in part 395.8, there is a question, number 26, in the interpretation, that gives you a couple of the examples. One of them is while the driver is en route on a trip and he drops the trailer and he wants to go do some shopping, go to a movie, get something to eat, he can use that for personal conveyance. The second part of that interpretation is that if the driver goes and he drops his trailer at the terminal and then he's going home for the weekend and he goes back to where he left the trailer to pick it up before he is dispatched on the next load, then the trip home can be logged as personal conveyance.
Okay. A couple of comments in just a moment by text at 68683. Make MR in the first three letters and more as we continue Ask the Law with retired senior trooper Monty Dial coming up next.
On the Midnight Radio Network. Midnight Radio Network and Ask the Law. Gary McNamara with Eric Harley.
One of the things that we have not talked about, by the way, we want to remind you that the show is live for Tuesday, or keep saying that. I'm looking forward to Tuesday, November 2nd, 2010, folks. I can't tell you how much I'm looking forward to it. I'm baking cakes. It is Monday, November 2nd, 2009, and the show is with Ask the Law with Trooper Dial. Old Blue USA is the sponsor, and you should know the information is up to date as of today. and the information can change without notice. Statements or comments made by anyone other than Trooper Dial are considered to be opinions only. Drivers, go to askthelaw.org with all your CMV questions. Click on the big red button that says email Ask the Law. One of the things that we haven't talked about, that we, you and I have talked about off the air for years, is a move towards a more regional freight system, and we're seeing that. We're seeing large carriers now bring in more regional business, looking for more regional drivers. As a result, when that happens, there is a change in pattern for that regional driver. Could be a new route. We've learned from insurance companies that that when you get on a new route, there's a higher rate of accidents.
Yes,
higher rate. You just simply don't know the route as well. They also may be getting into newer equipment. Some advice here for drivers that may be shifting into more of a regional movement, or as a result of the economy or what their company is doing or otherwise?
Just, you know, make sure that that's what you want to do. If it is, kind of the old saying, more power to you.
Right. But
just do something that feels comfortable to you.
Right. As far as the regulatory items, though, that are concerned, what they're trying to do in a lot of cases is get a driver turned around in a day.
What they're doing, and I've already seen, you know, before I retired, there was an LTL company that what they would do is they would have a driver that would leave Dallas and a driver that would leave Little Rock. They would meet halfway, swap out trailers, and each of them go back to where they came from.
Yeah.
And so by virtue of them doing that, the driver from Little Rock isn't down here trying to sleep in unfamiliar places. Likewise, the one from Dallas,
right,
up in Little Rock's, and you know, not sleeping in unfamiliar places,
and spending a lot of money living on the road.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
So you know, to me, that's the most logical way.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it seems like we're headed more and more in that direction. I got a couple of comments by text. Thank you. 68683 MRN as the first three letters. One that comes in pretty simple. What was wrong with the old 8, 10, 15? It seemed to work for about 70 years. You know, I have to ask, did it really work? Because we had a lot of questions. Monty, we were on before the hours of service rule changed, and we certainly had a lot of questions back then.
Well, I think the biggest thing under the old pre-2004 was the fact that FMCSA was holding their cards close to their vest.
Right.
And as a result of that, your truck driver, your safety director, your company owner, it was left up to them to try to determine what FMCSA was saying, this is what you got to do.
Right.
And so as a result of that, FMCSA comes in and teaches law enforcement, this is what we want.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, when you go out there and try to explain that to a truck driver, he says, show it to me.
Right.
Well, it's not there. Well, at least under the 2004 rules, it's all spelled out
right,
what you can
right.
and you can't do.
Yeah. Also, Mike says it's too bad that CSA 2010 won't compile this data on all vehicle drivers, no matter how big or small the vehicle is, regardless of the size, and give that information, make that information available to the insurance carriers. Actually, your information as a driver of a four-wheeler is available to insurance companies.
Oh,
if you're in a wreck or if you're a speeding ticket or anything.
But under CSA 2010, if you operate a vehicle that is subject to the DOT regulations,
mm-hmm.
and you're involved in interstate transportation and you go through a DOT roadside inspection, that information will be available to law enforcement as well as the trucking communities.
All right. Again, drivers, with all your CMV questions, I want you to go to askthelaw.org, click on the big red button that says email Ask the Law. Trooper Dial, thank you so much again
yes,
for all your years of service to our great state, but also the industry for being on this program, Ask the Law, and we thank you for it. And we'll see you again next month. Have a good Thanksgiving.
You too.
It's the Midnight Radio Network.
800-288-9227.